Hello and welcome back to The Layover. It's episode 3, and guess who's here?
Ben.
Me.
Ben is here.
Yes! We got Ben on the phone. Yes!
Every day that Ben survives the big wide world, I am so glad.
Me too.
Ugh. But we also have Michelle.
Hi.
Also exciting.
I'm far less exciting than Ben. I am also excited Ben has survived another day on Earth.
And we are equally excited for your continued survival as well, Michelle.
Mm-hmm. Yay.
Well, Michelle, I would say, makes us a lot more worried about her survival than Ben tends to.
It's true.
Well, you know what? It's interesting.
I think it balances out.
Allow me to amend. It balances out. I would argue that it balances out.
I think we're equally likely to die.
Yeah. I would argue that Michelle does extremely dangerous things, but I have a huge amount of confidence in her ability to sort of like handle it and be safe. Ben doesn't do any dangerous stuff, but I have a lot of concerns about Ben's ability to safely do regular things.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ben's knee just like spontaneously combusts just on random, yeah.
Yes. Well, the way I always explain sort of Ben's coordination to people is that like once every 6 weeks, Ben will show up in like a cast or like he'll casually mention that he was in the ER and I'll be like, what happened? And he'll say something along the lines of, I was walking up the stairs and I thought I heard a bird. And so then I fell down and broke my knee.
Yeah, that's happened.
It's never broke your knee. It's always that you dislocate
it. No, I
something.
Dislocate it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love going to the ER. The ER is kind of fun. I don't know if you guys have ever been there, but in New York City, the ER, like especially in the middle of the night, is like, it's a hoot. There's always a character or two. You should try it.
Mm-hmm. I have never been to the ER. I think
you
actually.
Better knock on that wooden door behind you right now, Adam Chase.
I got one on my desk.
Okay.
I got one on my desk.
Good.
It's bamboo. Is that technically wood? Is bamboo wood?
Ben, when are you turning 27?
Oh, Sam, if you are wondering if my ER bills are on your insurance now, the answer is yes.
Oh, man, that's going to make our rates skyrocket.
Yeah. Get ready for that.
Yeah, tough stuff.
Get ready for that.
Whoops.
That's all right.
Whoopsie.
As long as your knees keep functioning for jet lag. It's fine.
Yeah. I got that brace now.
Your knee has been, look, is it a spoiler to say that in the season that we just filmed that Ben's knee holds up fine? I don't think that's a spoiler.
It stayed put. The braces, I do think, really help.
Yeah. For sure. Anyway, well, I'm glad that we've covered this.
Is this your primary care physician? Is the emergency room?
Well, no, I wish it wasn't, but it, you know, from time to time, you have to go to the emergency room. People are always like, oh, I don't want to go to the emergency room. I'm like, I can't wait.
Okay.
So you wait there for like 10 hours?
Well, yeah, it does take a long time. But it's fun.
Speaking of fun.
Okay, the episode. We made an episode of Jet Lag the Game. Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, we made an episode of Jet Lag the Game.
Well, it wasn't very fun for me, but I'm sure it was fun for Adam and Michelle.
Yes.
Who knows?
I would say that everything that happens in this episode is pretty fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not a whole lot of hurdles, not a whole lot of stumbles or roadblocks this episode.
No.
And whose fault is that?
Right.
Seemingly the SNCF.
Yeah.
Being all sorts of consistent and reliable.
I would say that, like, it is perhaps worth going over a bit of, like, I think there was a combination of Michelle and I having good fortune and some payoff of some good strategic choices. And I think it's interesting talking about the confluence of things that allowed us to get this far.
Yeah. Here's my pitch.
Okay.
Throughout this episode, we do a insane luck counter.
Okay, sure.
Is that a bad framing? It's not exactly luck. It's just very narrow circumstance that allowed your continued survival.
Here's what I think we should do. I think that for each key moment of the episode, we should do a luck skill like ratio thing. Like we should be like this moment
a
was
meter?
This percent skill yeah. and this percent luck, right?
Okay.
I think we can break down each key moment on this front.
Yeah. Okay. Bringing the two ideas together. I think we do a counter of the moments where this run could have gone wrong, but didn't, basically.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sure. I'll take that.
And then with each one of those, and you know, it's a bit of a subjective characterization, but with each one of those, we can analyze the confluence of luck and skill.
Wonderful.
I will start with our first motion graphic. It's notable because you see Adam and Michelle going one way, and then you see everyone else going the other way.
Yes. Well, there's a few things going on here, I guess. So one is you guys are so screwed by the train schedule, and that's luck. That's luck, right?
Yeah.
Or lack thereof.
That's bad luck. Now, I will note, and I don't think that Michelle and I deserve an enormous amount of credit for this, but I think we deserve some credit for this, that we did have to figure out a way to get on this train without being caught in a way that involved using our freeze in a smart way.
Right. For sure. And as we discussed last episode, I think you found the only way to do it.
Yeah. And I think that it was not necessarily like an easy move. Like, we had to realize that you guys were going to be able to beat us there by anticipating this Uber move.
The Uber.
Right? This taxi move. And then we had to come up with, as you note, the only way that we could have avoided being caught by you to get on this train.
Yeah.
So I would say, like, I tend to think that any of the teams in this season, you guys probably would have done the same math we did and figured this out. But I do think that we deserve some amount of skill points.
Yeah.
For mm-hmm. getting on this train.
I would agree with that.
And that we got off the little tram and we squirreled around. We squirreled.
That's true.
You squirreled.
That's true.
Yeah. Well, it is true that on our side, it did take us a little bit to, like, you see some of this, not all of this, but like at first we were like, oh, wait, is this just GG for them?
Right.
Do we have them?
Right. Right.
And then we think through it a little bit more and we realize, no, actually,
there's a way.
This is exactly why we, not exactly why, but this is a strong reason why we developed the freeze was for this scenario where it was actually slightly more inspired by the scenario where the other team, the team that didn't make the catch.
The other team's going to get you.
Yeah. Mm. You know, just happened to be in a really advantageous situation.
Yeah.
Ben and Brian were not.
We were not. No.
Well, and I would say that is a significant thing on the luck counter. The fact that one team, well, but I would say that it's complicated. On the one hand, the fact that they're way behind, luck. On the other hand, they're so far behind that they have good access to the airport in a way that allows them to get to Zurich. So it's kind of like,
there's
two sides of that. There's two sides of that.
Yeah, sort of. On the other hand, from our position, we could have gotten that flight too.
It's true. You could have gotten that flight as well. That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
The only reason we didn't, I don't know if we didn't say last time was, actually, we sort of said this, but like the reason we didn't consider that flight, I think you see where we talk about like there's no flight that's worth it. That's because there was a like 7:10 or so flight to Geneva that was sold out. Mm-hmm. So like that was one that we were actually considering. And if it hadn't been sold out, genuinely might have taken it.
Yeah.
The reason we didn't take the other one or consider taking the other one was, from our point of view, I think it was too risky to justify based on our understanding of the situation, based on our flawed understanding.
Yeah. Yeah. We covered this, I think, last episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
But yeah. So I think the initial moves that largely happened last episode, definitely some skill, but then the train, the trains.
They line up.
Ugh.
And I'll also just throw out too, in terms of the coin situation, I know I'm going back to last episode, but like, obviously, a lot of luck on that first card.
Yes.
I mean, well, Michelle, we didn't get you to comment. That first card, I mean, that was crazy that the first card was pulled and able to be used in a situation that was not at all what it was designed for.
Right. And we were able to do so with accuracy because we had the information, not even because of like, I'm sure the card was intended to be use critical thinking and skills to triangulate the other teams, but we just happened to pretty much know where they were.
We knew exactly where they were, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's 800 free coins immediately.
It's a shame, too, because I like that card. I think it would have been
a good one.
Like, the dramatic irony of that card would have been interesting in a normal circumstance.
I know. It's very fun.
It's too bad.
And then I guess the other card, I mean, obviously the coin flip thing is literally about luck, but I would also say that we were good about just keep flipping. Just like during all our spare moments, just keep flipping. We're both flipping. We were like, you know, the train is going to sit there for 10 minutes. Keep flipping, keep flipping, keep flipping, right? Just about getting your reps in.
I think this season would have been much funnier if you... Wait, did you need the... Actually, no, you didn't need the coins from that to get on the train.
No, we still would have been able to get to Strasbourg, but we would have had to keep flipping once in Strasbourg.
Mm-hmm.
Damn, I really would have liked to see the permutation of the season where you don't make it out of Champagne Ardennes because you can't flip coins well enough.
Yeah.
That would have been very funny for me.
I would love to see people run the numbers on the coin flipping again, because I know you got like astronomically bad last time.
Well, one thing that was so crazy, and Michelle, you remember this, like on like maybe my sixth or seventh attempt, I got six in a row.
Yeah, very quickly.
And then didn't get the last one. And then we didn't get up to six again for like, what, like an hour or 45 minutes at least, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. But this is all last episode. Sorry, we have to do this episode. We have to be on this episode.
Yeah, so then you get to Strasbourg.
Yes.
Love it there, by the way. It's love
cool,
it.
Isn't it?
Yeah, okay, side note. We visited Strasbourg so many times.
We've been there many times.
I have never made it past the station plaza.
No, yeah. No. And it's so pretty. Like, the actual Strasbourg is so nice.
It's French Switzerland.
Well, since I lived in France, circa, like, 2014, I've heard so many people's hyping up Strasbourg. I've always wanted to visit, but only been able to see the train station. Like, we've literally visited probably, like, four or five times.
I've run around.
Yeah, I think you've both done some extended challenge sequences there, right?
Yes, I certainly have.
Not me.
Oh, really? It was all Adam?
I've been there unrelatedly.
Well, I won season one in Strasbourg. Season one of Tag won by me because of the challenge I pulled in Strasbourg that got me enough coins to get on the train to Champagne-Ardenne.
And then in season two of Tag, that's when you farmed up all of those. Isn't that where you farmed up all of those coins to go?
It's where I farmed up all my coins. Strasbourg has been extremely good to me in Tag.
Yeah.
I have racked up coins in all three seasons of Tag where Strasbourg was on the map.
And I think last time and this time, it was both like rather extended.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sequences.
It's true.
Anyway, I hope to visit one day. Okay, Stack Rocks. That's a pretty good one.
It's a good challenge.
Okay, I want to hear you guys talk about the four.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Because when I saw that, that shocked me. I was like, surely you could confidently get like eight or nine. But no, you went with four.
Well, you can't rehearse. And if you mess up, it's a veto.
Yeah.
Which was pretty bad.
I think that actually this is somewhat a new card design, or at least it's much more prominent this season. The challenge of like the number of coins you get correlates to how well you do this, basically, and you lock in a guess. We saw this last episode with Toby and I, the partially completed paper airplane flight.
Yes.
And I actually don't remember how much made it into the edit, but we were strongly discussing a pretty similar tactic of basically doing pretty short. I think it's possible that it's just the incentives with this card push you to not really going for anything difficult. So maybe it's a flawed card design.
It is potentially a flaw. Maybe there is some weakness to the design. I think it's just circumstantial, right? I think we were in a situation here where it was like, we really, really, really didn't want to veto. Even just getting that 400 was going to be enough for us to get a decent distance of what we needed to do the next day. And I think that we were very averse to the possibility of a veto, because a veto, if it had caused us to miss a train, we knew that was going to slow us down in a way that could be a big problem, especially if someone was taking that Zurich flight. So I think we were just really trying to be risk averse at this time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think another thing, I mean, and Michelle, we talked about this. I think we were pretty actively trying to, I mean, the title of this episode on Nebula is A Lesson About Hubris, right? And I think that we are trying very hard in this episode to not allow hubris to get our asses.
Yes.
And I think that we both have a tendency that we recognize to go aggressively in, you know, our strategic approach. And I think with this card, we were like, you know what? Our instinct is to try to go big. We both believe we could stack more rocks than this. But let's fight against our worst impulses here. Let's play it really safe. And I think our decision is vindicated in that we get a few coins nice and easy, and then we get to move on to another card.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's a good thing neither of us gambles. It would be bad.
Right. Well, I specifically avoid gambling because I love to gamble. Every time I do it, I'm like, I really like I'm having such an awesome time doing this. And I'm like, this is bad. That means I shouldn't be doing
Gambling's
it.
Gambling's freaking awesome.
Yeah. That's why I really avoid it.
But yeah, I think, especially after the start of the game that we had where it was a lot of patience, but then ambivalence. I think also we wanted to take action and not have a small error be the reason we lose the entire run because we had lost so much time already.
Okay. Next one.
Yes.
No phone curse.
I'm going to make the case that this is the best possible scenario to pull, not the best possible, one of the best possible scenarios to pull the no phone curse.
Well,
and here's my argument.
Okay, all right.
Here's my argument. Let me do my argument. Zermatt, I think, is the best destination to have as your destination with this curse because in Zermatt, you don't have to deal with a fairy.
Yes.
The thing about a fairy is that it makes that last, you know, we've talked about this literally since the first season. The kind of counterbalance of dynamics is that the fairy means that it is easier on average, I say it especially with Jersey, to get near your end location.
Yeah.
Because like, you know, from where we started this episode, we could have been almost physically to Jersey. We could have been to like Rem in like 4 hours.
Yes.
You know, two trains, sometimes even one train. Sometimes there are nonstop trains from Champagne-Ardenne to Rem.
Typically wouldn't have the coins for that at the start of the game, but yeah, at this
point. Yeah. But theoretically, yeah. So that's kind of like the bounce.
No, it's that last step.
It's that last step that is difficult. Whereas Zermatt, I think it's more stable throughout.
Well, we saw this in Tag 2 with Borkum.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that means that strategically, what you're often going to do is not necessarily actually try to make it to your end location, but rather kill time near your end location in your zone. When you do that, I think it's really important to have your phone to be able to look at train times, to be able to find out routes, et cetera, et cetera. So that's point number one. Point number two is you're dealing with the Swiss train network, train network in the goddamn world.
And as we see in the episode, maps everywhere, baby.
And it does well by
maps.
You.
All over the place.
And the trains are never late, so you never need to find, like, a backup route.
Look, okay, I will say this, though. I will say this, and I have a question for Michelle. The route from Strasbourg to Zermatt is not necessarily 100% intuitive. Like, I think going to Basel as the next step makes sense. But then going to Basel to Visp, and then Visp to Zermatt, I think that is actually a little tricky. And if I had not already mapped out the route, I don't think I would have known to do that. I think I would have been like, oh, I got to go to Bern or something. And that would have been slower.
One thing I do know, just to piggyback on Ben's question, is that it is not always the case that the fastest route involves a nonstop train from Basel to Visp. Because sometimes there's not a well-timed transfer that does that entire run. Sometimes I think it is the case that your fastest route is a connection through, I think, Bern. So did y'all know in advance that this was the exact fastest frequency, or did it just work out?
Yes.
Yeah, well, Michelle said that she had memorized it, but I want to know why.
Yeah, this was cut out of the episode, I will add.
It's true.
Okay.
But there's a whole segment where we were sitting on the train, and I was like, Adam, we have to be prepared for the possibility this curse could be pulled. So I'm going to memorize the route. And I sat there for 45 minutes. Again, this is cut out of the episode. But one might say it's luck that we got this card on our Swiss route. Yes. But also we studied. So
yeah,
we studied for the test.
You edited this episode. I didn't even know that existed in the footage.
No, you edited this episode, brother. This is episode 3.
I don't think I edited this episode. I have no memory for this.
You edited it.
Well, look, if that footage exists, I haven't seen it.
We could potentially add that back in. It is interesting context. I'm going to take another look at it.
I have a layover aside that this reminds me of.
Okay, tell us.
I don't think we've done this yet. Do you remember gaslighting Adam into believing that the restaurant at the top of the Auckland Tower was rotating?
No, it was the Soul Tower.
It was the Soul Tower.
The Soul Tower.
Yeah.
That was fun. That was a good time.
Have we talked about that?
No.
No.
Okay, well, we thought this episode might be a little bit light. I thought that was very fun. We haven't even talked about necessarily where we did that.
No, well, we haven't talked about what we were because normally in our episode one, we talk about our...
all of our pre-stuff. Yeah.
The arriving and wherever we arrive, and because it was the premiere.
Yeah, we were busy talking about the 500 people in front of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this episode might be a bit light on content, so this could be the moment.
Okay. Look, we can do it. We were going to the restaurant at the top of the Eiffel Tower, which Sam very thoughtfully had made a reservation for all the cast of Jetlag All-Stars to do. It was very cool, sort of a once-in-a-lifetime, very memorable experience.
That shit was crazy.
Well, it was our champion's dinner.
What?
It was our champion's dinner.
We never had a champion's dinner, but we had literally every person who had ever won Jetlag all together, so it felt fitting to have a fancy dinner.
It's true. And so we were going to this restaurant, and we were talking about, does it rotate? Because sometimes the restaurants at the top of big, tall things rotate. And we were saying that it didn't rotate. But then Ben was saying, but the restaurant that we went to in Seoul, because we went to a restaurant that was in Seoul Tower.
Yeah.
Ben was like, that one rotates.
That was good, by the way. Have we said that that was good and that you should go there if you're in Seoul?
It was good. N Hankook Grill.
Yeah.
I believe that's what it was. And I was like, no, it did not rotate. I was like, it absolutely did not rotate. I was like, I was there with you. Did not rotate. And then... really one of the most disorienting experiences in recent years happened to me where Sam looked it up and told me that, in fact, it does rotate. And he asserts this with complete confidence. He's like, I've just looked it up. It does rotate. And he like, I'm just really like, because this wasn't that long ago. And it's really, really, I mean, we all know sort of what my vibe is as a guy. And to be wrong about something that I was that confident about, it shook me a bit. Because I was like, I remember being there. I specifically remember that our view wasn't that good and that I had wished that it rotated, but that it didn't.
I mean, it's usually pretty noticeable whether your restaurant rotates or not.
I agree.
Which is crazy that Adam didn't realize it was rotating.
And Ben, would you like to reveal the rest of the story?
Oh, well, we all knew that it didn't rotate, but it was really freaking him out.
But that it was much more fun.
That's a much more fun way to have that conversation.
Yeah.
Well, the more specific thing is there is a restaurant in that tower that does rotate.
That is true.
But not the one we were at.
That is
and so
true.
I think that Sam looked it up and genuinely believed that it rotated.
Yeah.
Ben knew. Ben, you realized pretty quickly that you were wrong because the restaurant that Sam named was not the restaurant we went to, but you said nothing.
Yeah.
And just were like, yeah, Adam, it's crazy that you were wrong until I looked it up on my own like 20 minutes later and sort of felt an enormous amount of vindication.
It's a shame you did that.
No, I at first searched like rotating restaurant Seoul Tower and saw something, so I assumed it was right. I also pretty quickly realized that that was the wrong restaurant, but also understood that a little lie was a little more fun.
It's just fun. If you don't want to be gaslit, don't be so fun to gaslight.
Exactly. That's the moral of the story.
It's interesting. Michelle has nothing to add to this story. She's sort of just been making a face.
I think that Ben saying that is gaslighting. If you don't want to be gaslit, don't be fun to gaslight.
No, that's true.
It's the gaslit person's fault.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. No, that makes sense.
I think that's victim blaming.
Well.
Well, if it's their fault, it's not bad.
Plus, if it's fun for everyone, then...
Anyway.
All right, fine.
Going back to the episode, I want to note... I actually maybe think that we should put in, if we have that footage, us memorizing the route.
I thought it existed. I mean, we sat there for...
I kind of think that maybe the footage doesn't exist. I think maybe we weren't recording. But we can check.
Okay, well...
we can check.
For the people at home, on the train to Strasbourg...
yes.
I said, there's a chance we could get this and it would screw up everything. So I'm going to sit here and memorize. And I sat there with Google Maps because I obviously watched the show. But this is all new for me to experience 3D and tactically... so I sat there and I memorized, and that's where I came up with my song.
That's true. And I just want to note for the record that I think that this is now kind of a patented Michelle Carré on jet lag move, because I would argue that a big part of the reason that Michelle won Arctic Escape was that she had taken such care to memorize and analyze all of the potential tickets that were up for grabs in a day, and to be extremely prepared for all of them, researching them in advance, et cetera. And so I do think like Michelle knew what was in the deck, as we all do, and she was preparing for every possibility. And I think that is a huge part of what led to this being an option. I don't know that I would have had the most efficient route. I think that we could have put together a decent route without having it specifically memorized, but I do not know that we would have had the most efficient route. There's a big difference, right? Because you are right, Sam. I'm actually looking right now. If I were to be leaving like tomorrow morning from Basel to Zermatt, I would have to transfer in Olten and then go through Bern, and then my train would switch again. Then I would go to Visp, and then I would go to Zermatt. So like, it's not always this route.
Yeah.
Like this was specifically timed and memorized.
I think this is probably on average the best route, but there's certainly situations in which it's not. And, you know, obviously the audience knows that Ben and Adam did make their flight, so it certainly could have mattered.
Well, Ben and Brian.
I don't know their names.
If Adam was on that flight, it would have been real bad for them.
Well, he would have been disqualified, which would have been great for us.
I would have tagged him. No, we did. And again, if you guys were not on the most efficient route, if you had done something like stop and burn or something,
yeah,
I'm pretty sure since we were only one train behind you,
100%,
we would have been there in Bern.
Yeah, you would have nabbed us right there in Bern, I think.
Well, we got to work chronologically a little bit.
All right. What happens now?
Wait, I'm curious. Ben and that other guy, where did you stay at Paris Charles de Gaulle? Which hotel?
I don't know. Just a fucking hotel somewhere. I don't remember.
Okay. We stayed, as often I do, at the Citizen M. And we sort of decided we didn't want to be spotted. Not with the best logic. Mostly because y'all had decided you weren't really cooperating anymore, so we didn't want to give spillover info.
Yeah. Well, look, it didn't matter to us at that point. We were getting on that dang plane one way or a t'other.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it would have been silly for you guys to try and get on the plane anyway. I think if we saw you at the airport, we would have assumed that was 100% what you were trying to do, but it wasn't.
Yeah, we were actually sort of going back and forth because part of us wanted you to see us and like panic about like, what could that mean? Maybe we're taking the flight to that secret airport that you hadn't heard of.
Could be.
Or something. I don't know.
Could be.
But yeah, alas, you make it through security, which, to be clear, I was very glad that you did.
It was good. It was good for all of us.
Yeah.
That we did.
Yeah. Like, want to be clear that, like, ultimately, I'm very glad that y'all did this plan. I was initially not that into it because of not necessarily understanding the full situation and feeling a little bit blindsided by the lack of context ahead of time, because I felt like we were doing collective decision-making. But in retrospect, very glad that you made it.
Yeah, we got rid of our grappling hooks. That could have slowed us down enough that we didn't make it. Good thing we thought of that beforehand.
Did you wonder why you were on an Air Baltic plane from Paris to Switzerland? Probably not.
No, and it was totally empty.
Yeah.
Why was that?
Yeah, it could have been canceled.
Yeah.
That would have been crazy.
Well, there's no real interesting reason. The aviation nerds would notice because Air Baltic, neither France nor Switzerland is the Baltics.
No, not at all.
Yeah, very strange.
Actually, you know what? At the premiere, I probably had like five or six people independently tell me, you need to give us more aviation facts on the layover.
Go for it.
Please. I don't object to aviation
explain
facts
it.
On the layover.
Explain the thing.
You object
what
to
are these called? They have a weird name, don't they? They have like a name. Like the Winnipeg.
Oh, you're thinking of Fifth Freedom flights, but that's not the situation.
That's not what this is? Okay.
No, the situation here is that Air Baltic.
Have fun. I'm going to Google some stuff.
Russia did some bad stuff. You remember?
I recall.
Yeah, you recall? So we don't fly to Russia anymore.
I'm just going to start on the crossword puzzle while you do this.
If we're in the European Union, okay, we don't fly to Russia anymore. The Baltics are right by Russia, and therefore Air Baltic used to have all these flights into Russia, but now they don't have flights into Russia. So it meant that they had all these planes that they didn't really have something to do with. So they started leasing them out to other airlines like Swiss Air. Mm. So now a lot of Swiss Air flights are operated by Air Baltic planes. And that's the end of this.
Yay.
Well, I guess that's kind of interesting.
It's not the most, but
that's an orc.
It's a reason for me to do aviation facts.
Minifier's output
vapor.
Well, thank you for that segment, Sam.
Thank you, Sam.
You're welcome. I appreciate your appreciation. I wanted my appreciation.
Okay, are we done?
We're done.
Did I stop the crossword?
No, we're still doing it for the next 20 minutes, so you should continue the crossword.
Okay. Made a little bit of progress.
We made it. And the flight, it left.
Left early.
It was crazy, because it was a really short flight, and it left like 20 minutes early. That went about as well as it possibly could have for us.
I would just like to say that from a purely production perspective, I think it's very fortunate that Michelle and I noticed the existence of that flight before the no phone curse and were like very aware of it as the best route for you guys. And we're like talking about what if they made it and had like a pretty good memory of about when you would have been getting in and stuff. Because like, we didn't know, like, we had no idea if you had planned to get on that flight, if you were on that flight, if you were like, we saw it when we were analyzing like your options as we went to Strasbourg. And like the fact that you decided to do it and you made the flight, like this is a classic example of like every season of jet lag, there's lots and lots of cut footage of us talking about hypothetical things the other team might be doing in case that is what they're doing and we're cutting to them doing it. But like, I feel like the episode would have been kind of weird if we had just been like, we have no idea, we have no idea, we have no idea. Like the fact that we were able to continually be like, that flight that they might have taken could have landed. They might be on the flight. They might be getting on the flight. I was like, when I found out you had taken the flight and then I looked back at the footage, I was like, man, this is going to cut together great. Like, good job, me and Michelle. What luck in terms of just the production of it that we have this footage of us talking about it.
Mm-hmm. So did you guys just think we were like all way, way, way behind?
Well, you were.
Like, I know that you were sort of like preparing for every scenario, but like, what did you think was the most likely scenario for us? Were you assuming?
That you were on the flight.
Yeah, that we did.
That you were on the flight.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that potentially Sam and Toby would have gone with you, but I think we got the vibe that that wouldn't happen.
I think that we didn't even really consider that both teams would do. I think that we were more like, well, Brian and Ben are so far away, but they're near Paris and they're near the airport, so they'll take the flight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about Sam and Toby getting to Paris. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think we even realized that you and Toby could have made the flight because we didn't look at options
to go to Paris. We only looked at y'all coming down.
To go to Paris from where you were. We only looked at you guys going towards us.
Yeah. I would like to note for the record, in defense of Toby and I's record, it would have been in our best interest to attempt to take that flight.
Mm-hmm.
But we were in it. We were in the team game, even if not everyone was. And therefore, we did the move that was mutually most advantageous to the chaser side.
That's on you. That's on you. You're allowed to do whatever you want.
I don't know if it was, Sam, because you guys were so many hours behind.
Yeah, not based on how it actually played out, but based on, like, you know, normally I think the best scenario is one team does a risky move to get ahead, one move follows directly behind, or one team falls directly behind.
Look, I would still argue that following behind them was not crazy.
Well, especially if you assume that the catch happens, like in Bern or whatever, they're headed straight towards you now. You've got a great chance of catching them on the rebound. So it's an advantage to you in that way as well.
True.
But also, you guys were moving so, so fast.
True.
So I actually thought what was going to happen when we took the flight was, we're going to be so far ahead of you guys that you're not even going to get to us.
Yeah.
Right. You're going to have slowed down enough by the time you're done doing these challenges and whatever and the schedules that Sam and Toby will still have caught up to you and get you and that we'll be just like a little bit in front of you.
Well, I actually think that if you were to look at it from a purely theoretical perspective, not based on, you know, how the runners actually did it, probably the most advantageous team game, and this is kind of a example of like the weird kind of prisoner's dilemma in this game, would be y'all starting to follow straight behind and us taking that flight. Because I think you got to Paris before us, and therefore you could have probably, I believe, made more progress that night to falling behind.
Yeah, counterintuitively, I think that might be true.
Yeah. So if the game worked that we were just two hands of the same team and we didn't have that like weird incentive about the first person to make the catch goes next. Like, you know, there was even a version of this game where we didn't do that. We just did a strict rotation like we did in the past. Had we played that game, I think the move that we would have pulled would be we take the flight, y'all follow straight behind, right?
Yes.
I think so, because your fastest route, you had to go back to Paris and they were about to be in Paris. So I think they would have had a slightly better route behind us.
I want to put this out there, though, in case anyone is compelled by the kind of stuff that Sam is saying, which is that it is critical that you keep in mind, audience, the situation we were in, which was that if Sam and Toby got the catch, we were toast. Everyone would have been toast.
Right.
Was at least what we were thinking at the time.
Like, I do think it is fair, Sam. You have to keep in mind that at this time, it is not entirely unreasonable for Ben and Brian to perceive you and Toby as just as big, if not even potentially a bigger threat to the game than me and Michelle, given that you guys have, at this point, God knows how many coins. You know that it's only, quote unquote, only 6,000. In our minds, you have like 20,000. We're assuming that you can take a direct flight from anywhere as much as you want once you're the runners again.
True. Yeah.
No, I actually completely agree with that. And I actually saw some, I was reading comments on episode one, and I think some of the smartest ones that I saw were analyzing that, was analyzing the fact that it is probably in y'all's mutual interest to sort of collude against us at this point. And we actually had to write some rules for this. You remember?
Yes.
Yeah, that's true. No, there are rules that, because yes, we considered this. Yes, that there could be situations in which we could intentionally get caught by them to avoid you guys catching us because it would be in our mutual interest. And the rule that we said was that there is no communication permitted between runners and chasers.
Mm. Yes.
No digital communication permitted.
At least non-production related.
Yeah,
non-production communication. Mm. There was actually an allowance that if in person we were to see both teams coming at us, we could in the moment make a call as to which one to kind of let tag us, but we were not allowed to do any in advance collusion. This was actually, yes, I'd sort of forgotten that, but yes, this was a rule.
Yeah. This was sort of like, I think it's kind of amazing how much adding another team influenced the strategy in this.
I know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting.
And I think we talked about this in the game design thing where it's like, we thought that this was going to be a pretty simple, oh, we just add another team and they do this.
Yeah.
But then we started to think through just like how complex the incentive systems are.
Yeah.
And this is a great example of that. Anyway, we're getting off track once again. I said I thought we were light on content.
Turned out we had plenty.
Well, we keep doing the asides. My fault. But anyway, y'all enter Switzerland.
We do.
Woo. Yeah.
Into Basel.
And at this point, you're really just riding trains, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I will just say too, like, I'd like to make two points about this route for us, right? As Michelle noted, she had we had both, but at her urging, had memorized the route, right? Also, we were in Switzerland, a country that I'm extremely familiar with, the rail system of. Like, we went to Basel and I was like, I've been here before. Like, Ben and I were in that station in Schengen Showdowns very recently. And so, I mean, stuff like in terms of the friction of it all, like, literally, I was like, I know where the departure board is. Like, I know where the lobby is. Like, I know exactly where we need to go to figure out where our train is to go next, right? Like, even little friction points like that, I think it was fortunate. But I will also say, and there's some complexity here, but like, Michelle and I, in terms of skill luck, Michelle and I had chosen Zermatt, right? And other teams had the ability to choose Zermatt. We got to choose second.
Yeah, you could have chosen Zermatt, Sam.
Right. So Sam and Toby got to choose first, right? They chose Jersey.
Yeah.
And we chose Zermatt, and we chose it, and we mentioned this in the episode. The biggest reason that I give is that, because I think some people are going to watch this episode and go, it's so cheap for them to take this route. Like, shouldn't they need more coins? In any other region, you would need more coins to do this. But it is the case, as we learned in Tag 3, as I say, that in Switzerland, There's basically no trains that are classified as high speed, even though they are the highest speed trains that you can be taking between various points. And this was a huge way that you, Sam, were able to make it so far into Switzerland in Tag 3. Once you got into the Swiss train network, all of your trains were classified as low speed, but there was not a higher speed option for us to take to get in front of you. And that's why we were unable to put up sort of any fight once you started to make it up there.
Yeah.
And so a big part of why we chose Zermatt was we were like, if we can get into Switzerland, we can move really quickly towards our end location at very cheap prices. So I do think it is worth noting, like, the fact that we were able to move quickly at low coin prices was an intentional strategic choice, which is why we had picked Zermatt.
Well, this goes back to what I mentioned last episode, which I genuinely think was a major issue for myself and my team.
You didn't know about the Strasbourg to Basel. Yeah.
Yes. Throughout, my assumption had been that you had to go through the German rail network, whereas the German rail network is the inverse of this, where they have a lot of trains that are operated by ICE, the high-speed trains, and therefore are classified as high-speed, even on sections that are not operated as high-speed. And therefore, under our rule set, and, you know, obviously this is a little bit unfair here, but there's basically no one system that is 100% fair. So you kind of have to, like, deal with the unfairness. But under our system, that means that going through Germany can be extra punishing. And what that meant for me was that I thought that one of the flaws of the Zermatt route was that there's an incredibly fast train to Lyon, which physically gets you pretty close to Switzerland from Paris very quickly. And from there, generally with the right connections, you can get to Geneva with some relative efficiency. And therefore, you know, when you have a route that is physically slow but costly for the runners, but you have a different route that is physically fast but costs don't matter for the chasers, that's a great scenario for the chasers. You know, that's a great advantage. So yeah, the lack of knowing that that very fast but technically regional train,
low speed, yeah, Terra Air,
from Strasbourg to Basel existed, really, I feel like, comes back to bite our side here, just based on not understanding the advantages.
Well, I think it's important for us to close out the episode by returning to our thesis question, which is it luck or skill?
Oh, right.
And to that, I leave it to the audience to ultimately decide. I personally think there was a lot of skill in the sense of we memorized the route before the card was even pulled. We were excellent at stacking rocks. And Adam was excellent at flipping coins. Now, I will also say, in full transparency, Garrett Kennel, to whom I am married, is probably the luckiest person on planet Earth. And therefore, by familial, marital...
Is he looking for a jet lag team?
...association, I will admit that I do, by proxy, receive luck in that capacity. Did that give me an edge? I don't know. But also, we'll never know.
Calling your husband the luckiest man in the world is a very funny thing to do.
Yeah, it's really a huge kind
of
like...
Oh, I didn't realize that. No, but like when it comes to like luck, not because you married me. I'm lucky that I married into
this extreme luck.
Yes,
this up. You're
because
doing
he married.
Oh backtrack, my backtrack, God, backtrack. That's so embarrassing.
My girlfriend is the luckiest girl in the world.
Oh,
let me tell you
gosh.
About a lucky lady by the name of Maeve.
No, I'm privileged that I got to marry him because he is innately very, very lucky.
That's why you were privileged to marry him, is because he is lucky?
That's a good quality in a
among
partner.
Many reasons.
That is a good
among
quality.
Many reasons. Garrett is such a positive person. And I'm just fawning over my husband, but I'm obsessed with him. And you guys talk about y'all's partners. So yeah, I'm obsessed with Garrett. I love him. And he also has fantastic luck. Like, Garrett is the kind of person where, here's an example. We spent weeks looking for this particular type of antique phone for a prop in a video years ago. And he was walking down the street. This was after like 3 weeks of searching for this prop. And he saw this phone, the exact phone we needed, in a cardboard box outside a nail salon, and they were moving and getting rid of it.
That is crazy.
Absolutely not.
Like, those are the things that happened to Garrett. Like, Garrett is the kind of person that's like, man, it would be great if our flight landed 10 minutes early today, and then bam, it happens. So, merry luck, everybody.
Oh, you know what? this actually leads to a great thing for us to mention quickly, and then we end the episode.
Okay.
Which is to do our overnight notes, which you guys talked about where you stayed. Michelle and I didn't cover where we stayed, which is that we stayed at a lovely hotel in Strasbourg that had a restaurant there, and we ate. We were right by the water. Michelle and I had a lovely dinner. I had a chicken schnitzel, and I don't remember what you had, Michelle. I think you had a lentil thing of some kind.
I don't know. It was great. And we were by the water.
We were by the water, and I learned the whole story, like, of Garrett and Michelle's story of falling in love. It was very sweet. And then that was our overnight. It was a wonderful little overnight.
I ate grocery store food. Mm.
Grocery store food. That's some of the best food out there.
It was lovely.
Tough, tough, tough.
I love grocery store food. I don't. So next episode, we leave you on the train.
It's a heck of a cliffhanger here.
The train to Zermatt.
Kind of a literal cliffhanger in a way.
It's true. You're kind of on a cliff.
Yeah.
We're by a mountain.
Yeah.
So there's sort of almost a cliff element to it.
And, you know, as a reminder, the end location, we often say it's Zermatt, but it's not Zermatt proper.
No. Nope.
You know, we have this in the episode. There is another train to the observatory from Zermatt. As of now, Adam and Michelle don't fully know how to take that train.
They don't know how to take that train. They don't know how much it costs, when it leaves, all of these sort of critical things. And we'll see.
So that basically means next episode, either something very unprecedented or something very precedented happens. The precedented scenario is what Adam has had before. Adam made it to Borkum. Adam has made it to the last step before the end location before in very similar circumstances. Very similar starting point, very similar train gap, same line, literally, starting on the same train line that had the same weird frequencies. So either that happens, and that's where their run ends, or for the first time in the history of jet lag tag, someone makes it to their end location.
Yeah. Yeah.
And which one was it, Ben?
What if I said it and then we bleeped it?
Well, I was trying to do like a mini spoilers the game. You know, I was testing you.
Okay, yeah. Just to tease them, I'm going to say it out loud. But Manny, you got to bleep this.
They're going to analyze the length of what you say, Ben.
Manny, just put a big, long bleep on the following. And that's how this ends.
Damn.
So, yeah.
Woo.
Put a bleep on that.
Well, the only way to know is to subscribe to Nebula. Make sure you're ready to receive next week's episode.
Well, this is Nebula exclusive.
Right.
So, unless they're listening to the bootlegged version.
Which they could be, and I will flag that out.
Yes.
Yeah.
We know you're listening on a bootlegged version.
Don't do that.
On a subreddit.
Don't do it.
Don't do
but
that.
But if you are listening to it, subscribe to Nebula, because then you could find out what's happening. Actually, well, you're probably listening to it. Well, anyway. It would be hard to listen to a bootleg version, I guess, because you would be 1 week behind. Anyway, the episode's over. Goodbye.
Bye.